Mount Everest, the highest point on Earth, 29,035 feet. The Tibetans call it Chumaluma, the mother goddess. For a sighted person, climbing Mount Everest is one of the greatest physical challenges on the face of the Earth. For the blind, it's been deemed virtually impossible. This is a story of a group of guys who set off to conquer the mountain. They're my friends, but I call them heroes because they risked their lives to include me, a blind man.
April 2001.
Come on, knees up, ladies.
Pasquale Pivis-Catoro, a bearded climber in his 40s.
Oh man, it looks like Superman's Winter Palace in here.
Jeff Hefe Evans, in his 30s with wavy blonde hair. Behind him, a young man hikes with two trekking poles, Eric Superblind Weinmeer. Up ahead, a climber scales a vertical wall of ice, Chris Haas Morris.
Your turn, Biggie.
The team members help Eric secure his ropes.
All right, easy, 20-foot climb here, buddy.
Chris peers down from the top of the ledge.
There we go. Eric Hart, Superblind!
Eric clips a belay device onto the rope.
Bit of an overhang.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's pretty simple.
Eric slides the device a few inches up the rope.
Climbing!
He locks the device, digs his spiked crampon boots into the ice, and slowly belays himself upward. Wearing a parka and fleece hat, a heavy backpack strapped around his hips and chest, Eric reaches the top of the ice wall.
Good job!
Later, the climbers hike single file up a flat, snow-covered ridge the width of a one-way street. A long rope connects the men's harnesses.
We're on a narrow snow bridge here, Eric. Stay to your left.
Beside them, the ridge drops down into a steep crevasse. As Eric steps close to it, the snow gives out beneath his feet. Still connected to the rope, Eric dangles above the chasm. Jeff shimmies over on his stomach and reaches over the ledge. Below him, Eric gropes along the icy wall, his feet flailing, then finds Jeff's outstretched hand.
I'm pulling you up!
Peavy grabs Jeff's ankles, and they haul Eric out of the crevasse. Eyelids fluttering, Eric scrambles onto the solid ground.
That first step's a doozy, isn't it?
You all right, dude?
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful.
Peavy pats Eric's shoulder, and Jeff helps him up.
Thanks.
We got you.
Eric takes a few quick breaths, grips his trekking poles, and starts forward.
All right, buddy. Straight on. Five steps.
Mist rises from the craggy mountain.
I started my path up Everest 16 years ago, when I first went blind. Feels like I've dreamed and trained for this my entire life. Now it's all going to be put to the test on the world's tallest peak. But even if I do everything right, only one in six who try actually summit Everest and make it back down again. Alive.
Now three aluminum ladders tied end to end form a bridge over a deep crevasse.
This place is a shifting river of ice. The quicker we get through it, the less chance a Sarek of ice breaks off and kills someone.
Eric stands on a ladder.
All right, Biggie, you're up.
Step forward. Yeah, okay, that's the second ladder. You're locked in, yeah.
As he walks across the rungs, Eric clings to two ropes pulled taut like railings. The team watches him closely.
This ladder's high up, but at least it's rickety.
Peavy shoots Chris a look.
It's called positive pessimism. Eric understands.
Yeah. I can't feel my legs, but at least they're shaking.
Chris grins.
There you go.
The icy ladder quivers in the breeze. Eric lets out a long, shaky breath.
How far down is it?
Do you care?
I think it's scarier falling into the unknown. More scary than falling into something you can see.
Okay. I think I can see through to Texas.
Thanks.
Eric takes a hesitant step.
Come on, Eric. We've practiced this 1,000 times.
Just back a little bit and inside.
His foot slides off the outside of the ladder and he lurches forward.
Eric! Keep your weight over your feet.
Eric steps, hooking his crampons onto the next rung.
That's it, Eric.
You're locked in.
Eric advances his other foot.
That's it?
You're locked. Keep your ankle steady. Yes.
Yeah. That's it, Eric.
All right, don't lunge forward.
The ladder wobbles. Eric stops.
We're never this high up before.
Yeah, well, guess what? You are now.
Back a bit.
Eric repositions his foot.
Ankle steady.
How much further?
You got six more steps. That's one.
Chris, Peavy, and Jeff stand near the end of the ladder, Eric takes a crooked step.
No, whoa, no, whoa, easy, whoa. Easy, inside. Eric, more towards your left.
Eric feels around with his foot and finds the center of a rung. Licking his lips, he presses on. He reaches the end of the ladder.
That's it, Eric.
That's good.
Okay, stop. Okay, listen, Eric. Yeah. The next step you take is 1 foot up. That's home base.
Am I locked?
Yes, you're in.
Go.
Peavy holds the rope steady. Eric stumbles forward and Peavy grabs hold of him.
Breathe now.
Yeah.
Good job.
Chris leans in.
Only 29 more of those ladders to go.
Eric gazes forward for a moment, blinking quickly, then starts off. Now blue and orange tents dot a rocky field at the foot of a steep snowy rise. Words appear. Mount Everest Base Camp, 17,500 feet. As Peavy leads the team in, he jingles a tiny bell strapped to his fingers. The men trudge slowly, their expressions weary. Peavy pats Eric's shoulder.
Right here. This is your tent.
Eric touches his poles against the small nylon tent, then tosses them aside. He unclips his backpack, and Peavy lifts it off his shoulders.
I got it.
Eric feels for the entrance to the tent, then crawls inside. He flops down onto a sleeping bag, a drop of blood oozing from his nose. Peavy joins Jeff and Chris at a nearby tent.
All right, I'll be the one that says it. We just make a serious mistake bringing Eric up here.
Chris glances from Jeff to Peavy.
He'll rally now. He always does.
Eric closes his eyes.
Oh, yeah, and if he doesn't, all our chances of the sun will go with him.
Peavy holds up his hand.
I'll talk to him. I'll talk to him.
He gives Chris's shoulder a squeeze, then walks over to Eric's tent. He ducks inside, then sits down facing his friend, who keeps his gaze fixed forward. Peavy takes off his baseball cap, revealing a head of shaggy, thinning hair. He works his jaw thoughtfully.
You won't summit if you can't pick up the pace, Eric. You understand?
Blinking, Eric takes quick, shallow breaths.
Maybe you guys should just go on without me.
There's an old Tibetan saying. The nature of mind is like water. If you do not disturb it, it will become clear.
Am I supposed to snatch a pebble from your hand now or something?
No. It just means that maybe the best way to approach such a monster of a mountain is to break it down into more manageable chunks. Clear your mind of expectation and experience the climb just moment by moment, step by step. And however high you get on this mountain, that's your summit, dude, and you celebrate that.
Now in a flashback, a doctor examines a young boy's gray eyes.
Keep your eyes still, please.
The boy's parents stand beside him.
Okay. Thank you, Eric.
The doctor flashes a sympathetic look to Eric's mother, Ellen. She kisses Eric's cheek.
You were great. You go wait in the lobby for me?
Eric's father, Ed, watches him leave, then turns to the doctor.
Is it that bad? Eric has retinoschisis, an extremely rare eye disease. His retinas are already detached from the center of his pupil, so he can't see straight ahead. Now, he has some peripheral vision, but the pressure will eventually cause both retinas to split.
How long, and will he be able to see?
It's not very predictable.
Well, what's your best guess?
I'm sorry. Eric will be blind by his early teens.
Ellen moves her mouth wordlessly, then strides out of the office. Now 12-year-old Eric reads for his parents and two teachers.
Yet his heart wanted to fight.
Wearing glasses, Eric holds the book inches from his face.
To fight the whole world, but...
His mother gives him an encouraging nod.
But these two small hands were all he had to do it with.
A teacher smiles.
Thank you, Eric. You wait outside, honey.
The adults wait for him to leave.
We're not going to put him in a special school.
Besides his limitations, there are liability issues. We've never had a blind student before.
Well, he's not totally blind yet.
I was working in Hong Kong for a firm for the past 4 years, and Eric had private tutors there, but now that we're back, we were hoping to enroll him in a public school.
A school for the blind has so many techniques to offer.
No, my baby reads. Okay, he holds the book right up against his face, but he still sees it. He's smart. He swims. He dribbles a basketball. He plays football with his brothers. And he's not going to sit inside and wait for the dinner bell to ring. He's going to a normal school with normal children.
Eric listens outside the door.
As you can see, we just want him to have a normal life.
Now outside his house, Eric grips the handles of a bike. He squints at the blurry driveway ahead. Two older boys watch.
Eddie, come on.
A ramp sits in the driveway.
Let's go, little brother. We trust you. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
What are you doing?
Eric half smiles as he watches his brother's hazy, unfocused figures approach the ramp. Ed glances up at Ellen, who stands on the porch.
Come on.
Oh, God.
You can do it. Just stay straight.
Eric's brothers lie down behind the ramp.
Whose idea was this?
Eric pedals forward and his mother turns around.
I'm not watching.
He speeds up the ramp and jumps over his brothers. Eric skids to a stop with an incredulous grin. Nighttime. In his bed, Eric stirs, then opens his eyes. Squinting, he reaches over and switches on a lamp clipped to his headboard. His frown deepens as he touches his hand to the glowing bulb. Rising, he gropes around his nightstand, knocking items onto the floor. Eric staggers across the room, touching the closet door, then a gauzy window curtain.
Mom? Dad?
He searches the room with wide, darting eyes. His face crumpling, he leans against the wall and slides to the floor.
Mom?
His parents hurry in.
Eric? What's wrong, baby?
Ellen kneels beside him.
What's wrong?
She touches his cheeks.
Come on, tell me.
Who is that? The doctors are wrong. I can beat this.
Beat what?
I can't see anything.
She turns to Ed.
Hey.
Ed bows his head, and Ellen gazes at Eric with a helpless frown. She hugs him.
It's gonna be okay.
It's not gonna be okay, Mom. It's not.
He pushes her away.
Can't do sports. I'm not gonna have any friends. Forget girlfriends.
Ellen strokes her son's tousled brown hair.
I hate this. I hate everything.
His eyes brim with tears.
Stupid, it's
no,
over.
Eric, your life is not stupid.
She cradles his face.
I know you better than I know my own heart. And I see so much for you. It's more than you and I could ever even imagine. You're just gonna have the most extraordinary life.
She kisses his forehead.
It's gonna be extraordinary.
She pulls him close and he returns her tight embrace. She rocks him gently. Ed stands in the doorway, his soft shadow falling over Ellen and Eric as they cling to one another. Now the curly-haired Jeff climbs into Eric's tent and stretches out beside him.
How you doing, buddy?
Jeff studies Eric's face.
Oh, dude. Looks like you went 10 rounds with George Foreman there, buddy.
He holds out some tissues.
Yeah. Clean your face up.
Took me 13 hours across the Khumbu Ice Falls. We were supposed to do it in 6.
Jeff drops his gaze.
It's chaotic. There's no patterns.
I can't take a step without feeling like it's going to drop into space. And this is just the beginning. I don't know.
Man, those are natural fears that every climber has. It was the same thing when we climbed Mount McKinley and Annapurna. It's about ambition and fear. The ambition is the overwhelming desire to get you to the top. But the fear will keep you alive.
Eric stares off, then swallows hard. As Jeff leans back against the tent, orange light washes over their faces.
It's a beautiful morning.
Eric and Jeff break into grins, their shoulders shaking with laughter.
And we are going climbing.
We better get going just so we stop singing.
Words appear. Kumbu Icefall, Expedition 2. Now Eric stands before a ladder bridge.
This is all about getting you to the summit, dude. Well, we're all here for you.
Eric steps onto the first rung and the ladder wobbles.
I know you're scared, Biggie. Now, this sounds stupid, but just don't think about it. I swear it works.
Eric adjusts his grip on the rope railings, then takes a deep breath. Now our view fills with a blurry image of the ladder, as though it's reflected on the surface of rippling water. The men on the other side appear as hazy blue figures.
Still water. My mind is still water.
A smile flickers on Eric's face, and he starts across the ladder.
Right.
Eric places his boot-clad foot on a rung, gives it a little shake, and shifts his weight forward.
We've been practicing when we're not looking.
Eric grins.
We've been practicing when I'm not looking.
A fellow climber applauds.
Coming,
Eric presses on.
Okay, that's the second ladder there. E up a bit.
Sweet!
Eric takes slow, steady steps. Behind him, his teammates slap high fives. Later at base camp, PB checks his watch.
8 hours, 30 minutes. All right, man.
PB claps, jingling his handbells. A climber pats Eric's shoulder.
Yabadora, man, yabadora.
What's that mean, huh?
Yabadora means you're badass.
In a flashback, Eric's parents chat with a bearded man.
Excuse me, Bob, but Eric's here.
Ed guides Bob toward Eric.
Eric, this is Bob Allman. Bob, my son, Eric.
Nice to meet you.
They find each other's outstretched hands.
Bob's a lawyer. He was a wrestler at Penn. He won the NCAA championship in his weight class.
Blind since birth.
Cool.
Come on, guys. Sit down.
They sit in the living room.
Eric, we thought this would be good to talk about wrestling because it's one sport where it's a level playing field.
Yeah, you really don't need to be sighted to be a good wrestler.
Well, what if I, hit my butt kicked or, like, get my nose broken or something?
Oh, well, at least you don't have to look at it in the mirror, right?
That's true.
I don't really find anything funny about that.
Well, we talked about this, Ellen.
I know, but I don't think it's a good idea.
Ellen walks over to the window and crosses her arms in front of her chest. Ed gets up from the couch and joins her.
Ellen, we have a choice. We can support Eric's life, or we can be opposed to everything he wants to do. Now, I say we be his partners.
I know, I want him to do things, too. I really do. I don't want anyone to hurt him.
Well, it's a chance we're going to have to take.
Come on, Eric!
Now in a gymnasium, Eric wrestles with an opponent as his parents watch from the packed bleachers. Ellen cringes and hides her eyes as the opponent pulls back on Eric's arms, pressing his face against the floor. Freeing his hands, Eric twists around and grabs the other boy's waist. Eric's teammates leap to their feet. Eric yanks his opponent's arm out from under him, forcing him onto his stomach. The opponent starts to rise. Trapping him with his arms, Eric pins him onto his back. The boy struggles, but Eric holds him down. The referee slaps the mat. Eric's parents embrace, beaming. The referee stands between the two wrestlers, then raises Eric's muscular arm. In the bleachers, grinning students applaud with their hands held high. Eric's teammates surround him, hugging him and shaking his hands. Later in his bedroom, Eric's mother examines his swollen brow.
All right, I gotta put some ice on it.
The other guy look as bad as I do?
She presses an ice pack to his head.
Much worse.
This
Eric.
Cold, huh?
Stop being a baby. I'm gonna put it on.
He touches her necklace, running his thumb over the carved jade pendant.
Why do you always wear this bird thing?
Oh, I got that when we lived in Hong Kong. I was really happy there.
I mean, you're not happy here?
No, of course I am.
She sits beside him on the bed.
It's just in a different way.
As Ellen smooths his hair, Eric raises his hand to his eyebrows, then touches his cheeks.
I haven't seen my face in 4 years. don't even know what I'd look like anymore.
Well, you are getting more handsome every day.
Yeah, right. Forehead's all sticking out like a Neanderthal. My nose is huge.
Well, now, that is quite an insult, because out of all my children, you're the one that looks the most like me. Give me your hand. You feel my face. Now feel your face.
She places one of his hands on her face and the other on his.
Do you see how similar they are?
Tracing the tips of their noses, Eric smiles.
Yeah. You got a nose like mine.
Mm-hmm.
He strokes their eyelids.
And the setting of our eyes are the same too.
She opens her eyes and gazes at her son.
So if you're ugly, I guess that makes me ugly too, Mom.
Everybody knows you're beautiful, Mom.
And you're a real looker, Eric. You're gonna break a lot of hearts.
He rolls his eyes. Now words appear. Khumbu Ice Fall, Expedition 5.
4 feet across.
The climbers approach a narrow crevasse.
To your left.
Chris guides Eric to the edge.
Okay, hold up, E.
Okay. What do we got?
Looks like the ladder gave way. Big crevasse. We're gonna have to jump it.
Okay.
All right. This ain't no place to be screwing the pooch. We have to stand on the edge of the ice. Get a solid stance. Easy.
Okay.
And do not slip.
Okay.
You hear this?
He drops in a hunk of ice.
You slip, you die.
Setting aside his poles, Eric firmly grips the rope that links his harness to Chris's. Chris picks up his ice axe, and Eric steadies himself.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
With a running start, Chris leaps across the 4-foot crevasse and digs his axe into the ice. He grins, then takes hold of the rope.
Okay, your turn.
Eric stretches his pole across the crevasse.
How far is it?
What are you doing? No, you can't reach the other side. You have to jump.
I'm just getting ready.
Give me your poles.
Frowning, Eric flings the poles at Chris, who scrambles to catch them.
Jesus.
I wish there's a freaking ladder.
Well, you know what? You can wish in one hand and crap in the other and see which one fills up first.
If you ever quit climbing, you should become a philosopher.
Stop procrastinating. Make it a good jump or you will definitely die.
Why the hell do you have to keep repeating that?
Focus!
As Chris glares at him, Eric swallows hard. His stubbly beard flecked with ice, Chris jams the handle of his axe into the snow. On the other side of the chasm, Eric takes deep breaths, sets his jaw, then jumps. He lands on his stomach, several feet from the edge of the crevasse. Chris flops down beside him.
Good job, Biggie. You didn't die.
Now in a flashback, the teenaged Eric walks out of the school gym with his coach.
Hey, thanks for giving me a ride home, coach.
No problem. You're great today.
Ed approaches.
I don't know where my parents are. They usually come to every game. I don't...
Hello, son.
Dad? Why didn't you and Mom come to the game? I was waiting for you.
Ed looks down, grimacing.
I'm sorry. I wish we could have.
Dad?
Eric, there's no other way to tell you this. Your mother was in a terrible car accident.
Eric furrows his brow. Now a black sedan pulls into a parking lot. Eric and Ed climb out of the back seat, dressed in black suits, their ashen faces drawn into solemn frowns. Ed drapes his husky arm over his son's shoulders as Eric absently runs his hand over his cane. Ed bows his head.
Are you sure you want to do this, Eric?
Eric gives him a tight nod.
It's about death. 15 feet straight ahead of you.
Tapping his cane against the ground, Eric makes his way past a tow truck toward a row of totaled cars. He stops as the cane touches the crumpled front end of a small gray sedan. Watching him, Ed exhales a cloud of frosty breath into the air. After a moment, Eric reaches out and runs his hand along the mangled steel of the car's gaping hood. The muscles in Eric's cheeks tighten. He steps past the car's flattened tire and finds the door handle. Folding up his cane, he slides into the driver's seat, then pulls the door shut. Eric takes shallow, trembling breaths and slides his palms across the steering wheel. He touches his fingertips against the windshield. Circular cracks fan out like a spider web. He lets his hand drop to the dashboard. His fingers comb through sand-like bits of glass, then brush against his mother's pendant. Picking it up, he rubs his thumb over the carved jade wings in their setting of smooth yellow gold. Eric leans back in the driver's seat. Blinking quickly, he gently strokes the small jeweled bird design. His grip tightens and he squeezes his eyes shut, his features contorting with pain. Eric's broad shoulders tremble. The bird pendant glistens softly as he clutches it in his strong, calloused hands. Now Eric and Jeff sit on a ledge as lightning streaks the clouds below.
Oh, man, the lightning is just...
Shh, I know. It's right beneath us. Lining up the clouds that look like big, white, puffy blankets of snow.
Man, that's just creepy.
Now in a flashback, a teacher steps into a hallway followed by students with canes.
Did you know that there is a way to hear objects? Sound vibrations are constantly bouncing off objects and then moving back to us. It's called echolocation, or sonar. Bats have it, whales have it, and so do humans. Most humans aren't aware that they have the capacity. Who's this?
Eric.
Eric, you're up. This way. Could you give me your cane, please?
Eric turns to a friend.
You.
So stupid.
The teacher gives him a gentle push.
Here you go.
Straight?
I think so.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Eric starts forward. He wears a t-shirt with a motorcycle print, and his dark hair is cut longer in back. At the end of the hallway, he slows his footsteps. Turning, he faces into a wide foyer. A grin creeps across his face.
That's so cool.
Ah. With practice, echolocation can become a precise new way of seeing the world.
At a climbing gym.
This is a friction climb. It's pitched about 60 degrees.
An instructor clips a rope to a harness around Eric's waist, then points him toward the wall. Yeah. Eric begins to climb, running his fingers over the colorful rubber holds, then pulling himself upward. Seated on the floor below, Eric's classmates applaud as he swiftly reaches the top of the slanted wall. Later, he faces a steeper slope.
That was the first pitch. Now it gets steeper. Friction won't hold you to the rock.
Eric stands beneath an overhang at the base of a vertical wall. He grabs two handholds, then swings up his feet, pressing his toes against two rocks.
Move to your right, Eric. Feel for it?
Supporting himself with one hand, he gropes around with the other.
There's a big knob above your left hand.
It's inches beyond his reach.
It's higher. Where? Higher.
Eric touches the wall beneath it.
I can't find it.
Sport is about self-reliance, Eric. It's about moving upward under your own power. To be independent, to find your own way up that rock.
Eric takes a steadying breath and closes his eyes for a moment. As he reaches upward, the wall becomes a real cliff face. Eric runs a chalk-covered hand across the silver-gray rock and finds a thick red anchor rope. Gripping a rounded hold, he hauls himself up, then rests for a moment. High above him, sunlight bathes the cliff's summit. Using a carabiner, Eric clips his blue climbing rope to the red anchor and continues his vertical ascent. Standing on a shallow ledge, he shimmies sideways toward another anchor protruding from the face of the rock. He opens the carabiner, secures his climbing rope, and gives it a little tug. He feels around for a hold, then eases himself upward. With a water bottle and chalk bag dangling from his waist harness, Eric scales a steeply pitched overhang. Reaching the top of the rock, Eric props himself on his elbow, breathing deeply. His cobalt windbreaker blends with the bright blue sky above him. He leans over the side of the cliff.
Okay, Dad!
Yeah.
Set down below.
All right, I'm climbing.
Traverse over to your left a little bit. There's some nice holes there.
Ed climbs up the steep rock.
Don't look down, I don't.
So you do this for fun, huh?
You have your eyes closed or you cheat?
Ed unclips the rope from a loop attached to an anchor, then reaches up the rock for the next one. Later, father and son clamber onto the rugged summit on their hands and knees. They sit down side by side.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah. We made it.
Smiling, Eric pats his dad on the back. They exhale frosty breaths.
You're going to be a great teacher, son.
Thanks.
Phoenix is a long way from Connecticut, but I'm happy for you.
You know, it's funny. I always hated school. That was my job.
He takes a drink of water.
You know, you're the first blind person they've ever hired. Your mother would be very proud. You should be, too.
Yeah, well, student teaching's one thing. Now I gotta do it for real, right?
Well, I'd take a class from you any day, Eric.
Holding a guide dog by its harness, Eric walks through an elementary school hallway.
You ready? Forward, wizard.
The German Shepherd leads Eric past staring students and teachers. Now in his classroom, Eric points to a drawing labeled Mr. Weinmayer's Class Seating Plan.
Hey, welcome, everybody. I have a seating chart over here. I want you to find your name and sit in your assigned seats. Okay, if you need help, I have a chart that I can read, and I'll help you out. My name is Mr. Weinmayer. I'm going to be your teacher this year.
I can't see over Big Tiffany's head.
Can I sit by Jake? He's my best friend.
I'd rather you sit in your assigned seat, Brian.
My name's David.
David.
The kids sit down.
Okay, everybody in their seats? How's it going?
A girl raises her hand.
He can't see your hand, stupid. He's blind.
Okay, I won't call on you if you have your hand raised, but how about if you have a question, you say your name and I'll call on you, okay?
Tiffany,
you have a question.
Can we play with your dog?
No. That's Wizard, everybody. Wizard's my guide dog. He's at work right now, just like me. And when his harness is on, he's a mature, responsible working dog. His job is to take me from place to place. But when his harness is off, he goes into supreme dog mode. I was kidding.
Later, he sits alone.
Hey, man.
A teacher enters.
Hey! How'd it go today?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was, it sucked. Yeah, thanks for asking, whoever you are.
Sam Bridges.
Sam extends his hand, then pulls it back awkwardly.
Everybody knows who you are.
Sam Bridges, I read your file, you climb.
Yeah, rock climbing mostly.
Me too, we should go one day together.
Sam raises his eyebrows.
Yeah, sure. Okay, yeah, there's a climbing gym here in town.
Great, that'd be great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, man, don't worry about today. You know, first day, always a bear.
Yeah.
You're gonna like it here.
Thanks. See ya.
Now, what a climbing gym.
I got ADD, right?
Yeah.
And when I was in school, I couldn't tune anything out, man. I couldn't focus. I had this one teacher who told me that I should take up rock climbing, that it would help me to concentrate. And he was dead on, man. 100 feet up, dangling from a crimper by my fingertips. First time in my life I was able to concentrate.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, rocks bring out the best in people, dude.
Yeah, some of my best friends are rocks.
Hooked to belay ropes, they climb a sheer wall.
Hey, what do I have here?
Left hand up 2 feet, and over a foot.
Eric reaches for a hold and slips off.
Shit! Sorry, dude, I meant right hand. But you're good, man. We should do something bigger.
Okay.
Now at a bar, Sam and Eric drink beer and play darts.
So who are the good-looking teachers?
Koopman's okay.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Drury?
Eric almost hits the bullseye.
Nice shot, dude. What are you, super blind? Dalton is hot. She has always got these little mini skirts on.
Oh, mini skirts. I love those. Nice. Hey, you know what does it for me?
What?
a woman's voice.
Oh, nice.
No, no, really, like some women have that sexy purr.
I know.
You know, that's always a definite turn on me. And then others have that high-pitched chirpy kind. Dude, not at all, does nothing. And then there's always the highly articulate, fast-talking ones, which can be interesting if they're cute.
A fellow horn dog.
They put their arms around each other's shoulders.
Yes, I am. I am just as superficial as the next guy.
People look over.
Loser.
Eric and Sam grin. Eric throws another dart.
Hey, come here.
With a serious face, he pulls Sam closer.
Is Ellie Reeve good looking?
Sam takes a drink.
I'm gonna leave that a little mystery for you.
Thanks.
Why don't you ask her out?
What am I supposed to do? Walk up to her door, knock on it, and ask to borrow erasers?
You know, that's a good idea.
Now Eric knocks on a classroom door. Ellie Reeve, a dark-haired teacher, sits with her students.
Can I help you, Mr. Weinmayer?
Yes, I was wondering if you had any spare erasers. I can't seem to locate mine.
Ellie smiles.
I'm sorry. I'm all out.
Great. Thanks. But
if you like, you're welcome to pull up a chair and listen to the rest of the story.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you.
Okay.
Stepping forward, Eric taps his cane against a group of desks. He bends low to reach them and feels around for a seat. Eric sits in a small chair and folds his cane closed. He and the children listen as Ellie reads a storybook.
If someone loves a flower, of which one blossom grows throughout the galaxy on just one single star, it makes her happy just to look at the star. She can say to herself that whenever she sees that star twinkle, her flower is there. Her flower is safe. Because if the flower wasn't there, that star would be darkened, and all the other stars would cease to twinkle in their sadness.
Now words appear. Mount McKinley, Alaska. Eric and Sam get out of a car.
Ew, dude, your car's filthy.
Yeah, well, clean trucks are for sissies.
Sam opens the back.
Dude, I got something for you.
Yeah, what's that?
Lucky trekking poles.
Sam gives him two poles with wrist straps and rubber handles.
Nice.
Well, they say four legs are better than two.
These are sweet. You'd be like driving a Ferrari up the mountain.
Jeff arrives and eyes Eric's tie-dyed pants.
Dude, you look like a melted crayon ball.
Color coordination isn't exactly my thing.
They shake hands.
Mountains are more important to Jeff than girlfriends, a home, a job.
Dude, if I didn't have a girlfriend, I wouldn't have a girlfriend.
Driving a Jeep, Chris speeds down a snow-covered road and skids to a stop in front of them.
Ah, Chris Morris. This dude's real address is the third dirt road on the right.
Trouble.
First log house on the left was Summit, Alaska. I kid you not.
Chris gets out and shakes their hands.
Hey.
Hey, dude. Yeah. How's it going, brother?
Good.
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Hey, listen, I just want to say right off the bat that I don't want to be treated any differently than any other person on this team.
Wouldn't dream of that, Haas. Awesome.
That's cool.
How's that for starters?
He tosses Eric his backpack.
Gear up.
Great. I think I spoke too soon.
Now at school.
Hey, Eric. Have a great Christmas.
Hey, thanks. You too, Tom. Forward, Wizard.
Mr. Weinmayer.
Hello, Ms. Reed.
Hi. I wouldn't want you to leave without this.
What is it?
Oh, it's a card.
He reaches for it.
Oh. Cool. Can you read it for me, please?
Oh. No, you read it. Do you want me to open it?
No. I can do it. Thank you.
Holding Wizard's harness with one hand, Eric opens the envelope. Ellie watches him expectantly.
Some bro. Merry Christmas. It's been really nice getting to know you.
No, not now.
Oh,
gosh. I realized that I dictated to an 80-year-old blind man, and that's why it's you know, kind of bad.
That's really cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, Merry Christmas.
Yes, well, Merry Christmas to you too. Where was it? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
forward.
Ellie watches glumly as he starts to leave.
Hey, Ms. Reeve?
Mm-hmm.
When I get back, would you like to go out sometime?
Yes.
She beams.
Okay, great. That'd be great. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right, Wizard.
Thank you.
Food on my face?
Eric and Ellie dine at a fancy restaurant.
Nothing in your teeth either.
Okay.
So there was this king once upon a time. You always got to start a story with once upon a time. Once upon a time, there was a king. And he had this daughter that he wanted to marry off. She was beautiful, by the way. And he didn't want any just Tom, Dick, or Harry as a son-in-law, right? So he devised a test.
He lines up a vase with a salt and pepper shakers.
You will. Whichever eligible bachelor could work his way through the maze would win his daughter's hand in marriage. So months pass, and none of these guys can do it, right? And the princess, she's getting really depressed. Her therapy bills are skyrocketing. She has, you know, her fairy godmother on speed dial. Am I ever going to find my true love? So one day,
he picks up a butter knife.
This handsome young blind man walks up to the castle.
Handsome? Okay.
Very. Well, dashing, for sure. And nobody thought he could do it. I mean, everybody laughed at this guy. So he enters the maze. And every time his path was blocked, he would pause and wait for a breeze. For this dashing blind dude knew that wherever there was a breeze, there must be a passageway. Pretty smart, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So we follow the breeze.
Eric weaves the knife around the shakers in the vase.
Through the maze, out of the maze, and into the heart of the fair young maiden.
He hands her the knife.
And they were married and lived happily ever after.
Wait a minute, you've heard the story?
Actually, I saw the movie.
Ellie glances down awkwardly. She fidgets with a butter knife, then sets it down.
I'm sorry, I...
No. Ellie, you don't ever have to apologize. You don't ever have to be self-conscious around me. Nothing you say can be wrong, okay?
Her face brightens.
And don't ever think you can tell a better blind joke than I can, deal?
Deal.
They shake hands. Eric sits back, smiling.
Saw the movie. That was a good one.
He takes a sip of red wine.
What do you miss most now that you're blind?
Nothing, really. It's been a while.
Come on. There must be something that you miss.
I miss faces. Yeah. I miss seeing people's expressions go from sad to happy. From anger to laughter. Yeah, I miss that.
Ellie lowers her gaze and licks her lips thoughtfully.
Do you wonder what I look like?
Is it a test? No. Yeah, no, of course. Of course I do.
You can feel my face.
Ellie, blind people only do that in the movies. But since you asked, I would love... if the offer still stands, yeah.
Reaching across the table, he raises a hesitant hand to Ellie's face, and she closes her eyes. A tear slides down her cheek as he touches her. Smiling, Eric runs his hand over her slender nose and traces the fullness of her lips. As Ellie looks at him with glistening brown eyes, he strokes her soft cheek.
I wish you could see me.
Just did.
She opens her mouth to speak.
Happy birthday!
Diners toast, startling them. Wizard jumps up.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Now Eric leaves a flower shop.
Left, Wizard, left.
Carrying a bouquet of flowers, he leans into a gusty wind. Now Ellie opens her door for Eric. His windblown hair sticks up and the flowers are stripped and bent.
Hey.
Hi.
These are for you.
He holds out the bouquet.
You're a mess.
Yeah. There's a small tornado outside of your house, apparently.
Well, you went through all this trouble for me.
That's... Oh, no, it's no big deal, really. Wizard picked them up.
Ellie takes the flowers.
Sweet. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Eric shifts his weight, and she raises her eyebrows eagerly.
Come here.
Thanks.
As he steps inside, she puts her arm around him and gently pulls him into a kiss. Their lips press into softly deepening kisses. Now Ellie and Eric rock climb together.
Okay. Got it?
Yes.
Ellie reaches out her hand and Eric pulls her up onto a rugged ledge.
Okay. Good job. Hey, you want to lead the last pitch?
I've never led before.
You can do it.
She eyes the steep rock wall.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Around them, towering hills of desert rock rise against a blue sky. Ellie starts to climb.
All right.
Finding her footing, she clips the rope connecting their harnesses into the next anchor on the rock face.
Go for it.
Ellie scales the rock as Eric belays her from the ledge below.
It was fine. We're good hold, okay?
Eric feeds her more rope, listening as she ascends.
Okay?
Yes!
Ellie reaches the summit. Smiling, she stands up and extends her arms like wings.
Wow! Oh my gosh, it's beautiful!
Awesome!
Eric grins. Later, Ellie holds Eric's hand as he sits down beside her on the summit. She wears a pink parka, and he wears a zippered fleece. He rests his hand on her leg.
God, it's nice up here.
Yeah.
She leans her head against his shoulder, and he kisses her hair. He takes several deep breaths.
Hey, Ellie. God, this is, climbing McKinley was easier than this. I've been getting a lot of offers, you know, for lecturing and other climbing expeditions. And, I think I can make a good living out of it. But in order to take full advantage of it, I need to be in Colorado. And, I want to move there.
She nods weakly.
And I want you to move with me.
She shoots him an impatient look.
Eric, you know my feelings on that subject.
I know.
I won't move anywhere.
I know.
He holds out a small box with a diamond ring inside. Ellie's lips stretch into a smile, then fall open into a gape.
Ellie. You are the most important aspect of my life. More important to me than any mountain. And, I want you to be my wife. Will you marry me?
Tears glisten on her beaming face.
God, I wish I could see your face right now so I could see what it's saying.
It's saying yes.
Eric smiles and pulls her close. They kiss, bathed in golden sunlight.
Let me put it on you.
Okay.
He takes out the ring and searches for her hand.
It's the same. Right.
She watches him put the ring on her finger.
There.
It's beautiful. So beautiful.
Their lips lock in a gentle kiss. Now white clouds drift above Everest.
Dear Ellie. Over the past 6 weeks, we've climbed back and forth through the icefall, and each time I do it faster and faster. It took me 13 hours the first time, but now I'm down to 6. Big relief. You can't imagine what it's like up here. Tomorrow, we're climbing through the Western Coombe, which will get us to Camp 3. PV says that if you make it there, you stand a fighting chance of summiting. Thank God for PV. I keep thinking how much our lives changed the day we met him. I miss you. Kiss our little girl. Be home soon. Eric.
In a flashback, Eric and Ellie shop in a sporting goods store, pushing a baby stroller. He taps a box with his cane.
Oh, yeah?
What's her name?
Sackbox.
Nearby, PV talks with a blonde woman.
Kim, there's Eric Weinmayer.
Eric Weinmayer.
Yeah.
Hi.
He shakes Eric's hand.
I'm Pasquale Scaturo. Everyone just calls me PV.
Yeah.
Good to meet you. This is my wife, Kim.
Hi.
They all shake hands.
It's my wife, Ellie. That's my little girl, Emma.
Hi. Hi, nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet both of you. So, I've heard a lot about you, Eric. What's going on?
Not much. Just, you know, sponsors, freebies, as usual.
Yeah. So, where's your next climb?
I don't know. I've done Kilimanjaro, Aconcagua, Mount McKinley.
Listen, have you ever considered climbing Everest?
Yeah. I thought about it. Considered it. Dreamt about it, but...
Dude, you wanna? I'm serious. I love climbing, organizing expeditions. I'm not a guide. I'm a geophysicist. But...
Kim lifts her eyebrows at him.
I just led the first whitewater expedition on the Tukesi River. I've been up Everest twice.
That's awesome.
Peavy notices Ellie's cool expression.
Look. Here's my card.
He extends it to her, but Eric takes it.
Thanks.
You just think about it, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Hey, you too, Kim.
Nice to meet you.
See ya.
Peavy and Kim leave.
Ready?
Yeah.
Now the Weinmayers read at home.
Look, Ellie, I know you don't want to hear this.
Her head bowed, Ellie sets her book on the coffee table.
I'm thinking about climbing Mount Everest.
Here we go again. It's not that I think you won't use good judgment or that Everest is out of your league.
Then what,
and look,
Ellie?
I'm not saying that I don't want you to go either. I mean, I know you've already planned it out anyway.
No, I haven't. I never even spoke the words out loud before.
Remember when I turned back on Kilimanjaro 700 feet from the summit? And I cried all the way home on the airplane?
Yeah. Yeah, you cried for days.
Yeah. Because I fell short.
Eric puts aside his book and turns to her.
If it gets hard, I can turn back gracefully.
You sure?
This is a chance for me to be a pioneer. To do something that no blind person has ever done before. I want an extraordinary life. Right? I'm anything but ordinary.
But if you fail, it might send the wrong message. Like a blind person shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Is that who we are? People don't take risks.
Ellie smiles tightly and tucks a loose strand of hair behind her ear.
How long?
3 months. Look, I know it's a long time.
She gets up.
I know it's a long time to be away from you and Emma.
She kneels in front of Emma, who plays with a baby Jim.
PV, he's going to put together a great team.
Ellie stares off, lost in thought. As Eric feels his way over, she runs her trembling hands over her face. He gives her a firm hug.
Hey.
He kisses her cheek.
I said to you that no mountain is more important than you, and I meant that. So if you don't want me to go, I won't.
She shakes her head.
What kind of example would I be setting for Emma if I don't let you go? That I stop people from chasing their dreams.
His lips curl into a smile.
Does that mean you support me?
Of course. Every little inch of the way. This is who you are, right? And this is who I want Emma to be, too.
He brushes aside her hair and kisses her cheek. Now at a team meeting.
It will be 6 to 10 weeks on the mountain before attempting to summit. Now, the goal is to get up and down several times to make sure that we're acclimatized.
PV guides Eric's hand along a model of Everest.
We'll start at base camp.
Okay.
We'll make a trip through the Khumbu Ice Falls to camp 1 and back. We rest. Then it's back up to camp 1 That's when we begin our acclimatization program. But from there, we'll go through the Western Coombe up to Camp 2 and rest. Then it's on to Camp 3, way up here on the Lhotse face, right there.
That's far.
And then all the way back down to base camp again.
Okay.
Now once we're back there, we'll rest for a whole week before heading back one last time all the way up to Camp 4 for our summit attempt.
Eric touches the summit.
Great. Should be a cakewalk.
Yeah.
Sam.
Dude, that's just a model, man. The real mountain's a little bigger.
Listen, that's the trick of Everest. Now, technically, it's not as difficult as McKinley or any of the other mountains you guys have climbed, but the altitude will kill you.
He looks hard at Eric, Jeff, and the other men.
Okay, now you're all accomplished climbers. Hell, Eric and his boys have already climbed 3 of the 7 summits and El Capitan, but this is the big daddy. And Eric's daddy, Ed, has some great news for all of us. Ed?
Ed stands up.
Thanks, PV. Well, it looks like I've convinced the National Federation of the Blind to commit $250,000 to fund the expedition. Now, bear in mind, that's blind people all across the country doing bake sales and car washes to raise this money. So let's make them proud. If Eric can get to the summit, it won't change people's perception of what a blind man can do. It will shatter them, huh?
He pats his son on the shoulder and Eric grins.
I love that.
Later, Eric chats with his buddies.
What's up, Hoss? How you doing, Hog?
So how you feeling, bro?
Still a little shocked, actually.
Yeah. Oh, you want a hug? That's
Eric hugs Chris.
Where's Sam?
He's moping on the couch.
Yeah,
over
got
there.
The dark clouds rolling in.
Using his cane, Eric heads over to Sam. He plunks right down in his friend's lap. Playfully, Sam pushes him off.
Dude, can you believe we're actually going to climb this beast?
With a smile, Eric runs his hand over the model's summit. Sam walks up, his hands on his hips, and sighs.
Well, there's no easy way to tell you this. I'm not going to come.
What? You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not. I've been thinking a lot about this, and...
Sam, you're the one who got me into the whole climbing obsession. I mean, you're going to bail right before we climb the biggest mountain in the world?
I got a family now. I just don't want to be away from them for that long.
I got family, too.
I know, but you have to do this, Eric. I don't.
Eric blinks hard and raises his eyebrows. Turning away, he releases a long breath.
I don't know if I can do this without you, Sam. I mean, you've been on every big climb I've ever been on.
I know, dude. But so have Jeff and Chris. And you got PV this time, man. There's nobody better than him.
Sam watches as Eric wrinkles his brow and shifts his weight. A smile tugs at Eric's lips.
Okay. Hey.
Sorry.
It's okay. Hey. It's okay.
He rests a hand on Sam's shoulder.
You still help me train?
Sam gives him a relieved sigh.
You bet your sweet blind ass I'm going to help you train. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do everything in my power to get you to the top of that mountain. And when you are there, freezing your ass off, I'm going to be down here all toasty and warm, taking all the credit. I can see myself on Oprah already.
Tell her I say hello.
He gives Sam a big hug. Now Eric, Sam, Chris, and Jeff run up flights of stairs wearing full backpacks. Chris sprints ahead. Eric stops and clutches the railing. On a windy night, Eric kneels in the snow, struggling to assemble a tent. Sam grabs the flapping tent cover and pushes Eric aside. Later inside the tent, Eric fumbles with a cook stove. Jeff takes it from him.
Let me do that.
On another night, Ellie watches Eric in the backyard, putting his tent together by himself. Daytime. Eric and the others hike through the snowy woods. Later, Eric kneels beside his assembled tent, tapping the final stake into the ground. Grinning, Eric takes off his gloves. He tosses them at Sam, still putting his tent together.
Quick, look there, Wayne. There, it's about time you figured that out.
He nails Eric with a snowball. Now at the top of a steep slope, Jeff and Eric are roped together. They drop to their bellies and slide down the precipice. As they pick up speed, Eric jams his ice axe into the snow and they stop. Inside, the climbers race up the stairs. Eric sprints to the top and lifts his arms.
You smell that? That's the smell of victory.
I think you boys are ready.
Eric clutches Sam's shoulder.
We're gonna miss you up there, man.
I know, man. You know what, Lamar?
Yeah.
You may be blind, but you sure are ugly.
They embrace. Now, high in the Himalayas, a village is built on the ledges of an arid, bare mountainside. Massive snow-covered peaks loom on the horizon. Several dozen climbers follow a path that winds through the village. Tall white flags flutter above them. Words appear, March 26, 2001. 10-day trek to base camp. On a sunny trail lined with evergreens, the climbers wear thin pants and jackets. Jeff shakes bells for Eric, who walks close behind, feeling the uneven ground with his hiking poles. Later, they navigate narrow mountainside switchbacks. In a clearing, Peavy kneels beside a cairn, a tall pile of rocks, and waves a handful of juniper branches. As the climbers arrive, they notice Peavy and others praying at the cairns. Then their gazes fix upward. Jeff stands with his hands on his head, grinning. Gently, he lifts Eric's hand and points his trekking pole toward Everest, a mammoth pyramid of snow-covered rock rising high in the distance.
Eric, man, check this out.
Dude, you can see the South Pole, man.
Yeah, it's this way.
It's the summit. There's huge plumes of snow coming off the top, man. It looks like a waterfall running up into the sky.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Beside them, Chris and Ed, Eric's father, gaze at the mountain. Jeff gives Chris a playful slap. Two other hikers stare nervously up at the peak. One shifts his gaze to PV, still kneeling beside the cairn.
What are all those mounds?
Memorials. The Sherpas and climbers killed on other expeditions. Some of them are friends of mine. Their bodies are still up on that mountain. It's too risky to bring them back down.
The climbers' expressions grow somber. Ed grips his poles and continues up the trail. Eric falls in behind him. High above a gorge, climbers and pack animals cross a narrow bridge strung between the cliff tops. Later, they hike in full view of Everest, its snowy near-vertical face jutting into the clear blue sky. Now the climbers trudge toward a vast dry field of rock surrounded by towering peaks. Hiking slowly over the trail of broken rock, the climbers approach several clusters of tents, their colorful nylon domes coloring the gray moon-like landscape. Words appear, April 5th, 2001. Everest Base Camp, 17,500 feet. Climbers from the other teams gather as Eric and his father arrive. Eric smiles.
Oh, everyone's clapping. Today was a walk in the park.
I think they're clapping for me, sir.
Ed limps to a boulder and sits down heavily.
There's one for me.
There you go, Dad.
Oh, it's a miracle.
It's awesome.
I didn't think I'd make it.
Good job.
That's my summit.
All right, enough rest. Let's put up the tent. You ready, Dad?
All right, you rest.
Later in a tent, monks in robes bless the climbers.
You're up, Biggie.
A seated monk watches Eric drape a white silk scarf across his wrists. The monk hesitates, then places the scarf over Eric's neck. Eric adjusts his cane. The monk mouths a prayer, then extends his hand to Eric, who turns and walks away. The monk's brow furrows. He looks up at Jeff.
He is climbing the mountain too?
Absolutely.
Later, Eric pours coffee for another climber.
Want some coffee?
Yes, please, Eric.
There you go. Thank you. Sherpas weren't exactly lined about the door to join our expedition. I just want to let you know I appreciate you coming along.
You cannot take it personally. In our culture, we believe that those who are blind have bad karma.
Huh. What made you join us then?
I believe that people make their own karma.
I drink to that.
Besides that, PV paid me a lot of money.
At base camp, the climbers assemble beneath strings of colorful prayer flags. PV faces them.
Well, dudes, no church can rival the grandeur of Everest.
He takes off his cap. The white scarf around his neck flutters in the wind.
Dear God, give us the will and the patience to climb this awesome mountain and come home to our loved ones. Help us to make good decisions, take care of one another, and leave the mountain with our friendship strengthened. Amen.
The climbers toss handfuls of dirt into the air. Several climbers shake hands with Ed. Eric smiles to his father.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Dad, you gonna be okay getting down?
I'm good to go, sir.
Ed shoulders his backpack. He shakes hands with another climber. Then Peavy steps up and gives him a hug. Eric and other climbers share goodbyes. As the others leave, Ed grips his poles and faces his son.
Well, Eric, thanks for letting me be part of this this great adventure.
Of course, Dad.
Now, we're going to be following you pretty closely, so we expect that summit call, all right?
No, you will. You'll get one.
Eric reaches out and pats his father's shoulder. Ed turns to leave.
Have a good flight back. Take good care of that hip. All right?
Yeah. You be safe, son.
All right.
Ed leans on his poles and walks away. Eric takes in a deep breath. He stands alone beneath a string of prayer flags. Now clouds roil over Everest. Words appear. May 20th, 2001, Everest Base Camp. In a tent, Eric, now with a full beard, sits with other climbers.
Well, ain't gonna be traveling today. It's 0-0 out there. It's all socked in.
Pass the T-mic.
Sky gets so gray and flat you can't tell it from the snow. Come to think of it, you're in 0-0 all day long, blind boy. You want to head out? It's probably okay.
Hey, Biggie's got a better sense of direction than I do, man.
PV walks into the tent.
4 days of high pressure, starting tomorrow.
Oh, yeah!
Okay!
Now listen, we only have a few days left and we have to be off the mountain. So one hard day to camp two, another to camp three, another to camp four, then summit day.
You guys are gonna do it, hey?
As the climbers slap each other on the back, right, Eric's expression grows serious.
Three spots, have a seat.
Yeah, man.
Under a light snow, Eric and his team hike up a slope. Each climber grips a handheld ascending device, which tethers them to a fixed line. With their free hands, they swing ice axes into the snow. Words appear. May 23rd, 2001. Lhotse Face, 24,000 feet. Eric stops to take in a deep breath.
You all right, dude?
Feels like I'm running a marathon with a plastic bag over my head.
Hey, don't worry. It's supposed to feel miserable.
Later, Eric follows Chris as they ascend a snow-covered cliff face. Words appear. 25,000 feet. Death zone. Heavily, Eric pulls himself up the fixed line and marches to the top of the cliff. Standing on the flat ground, he struggles for breath. Eric collapses and vomits in the snow. Jeff pats him on the back.
All right, dude! 25,000 feet up,
Superblind's puking his guts out. It's a fine day on the mountain.
Jeff steps past Eric.
Let's do it.
Later, Eric treks across a snowy plateau.
Follow my voice, Eric.
PV walks in front of him.
100 yards.
They approach a few dozen tents.
Welcome to Camp 4, dude. Last stop before we summit. Yeah!
Later, a blackbird steps past oxygen canisters and shredded nylon tents littering the camp. Words appear, Camp 4, South Col, 26,180 feet. Several climbers take in the view, watching clouds flow across snowy peaks below them. At night, the climbers sit in their tents wearing parkas and hats. At base camp, Kevin talks on his radio.
The original plan, PV, was to rest only 7 hours.
Head to the summit tonight.
Copy that, Kevin, but a lot of the stronger climbers are toast after setting up camp. Will the weather hold another day?
Kevin types on a laptop computer and brings up a weather image.
Doesn't look good.
PV shakes his head, then looks at the climbers huddled beside him.
Well, dudes, what do you think?
They stare back, and PV lifts the mic.
Anyone that wants to summit tonight, give me a yes on the radio. Otherwise, we stick together, push out tomorrow. But it's your call. It's your call.
Chris and Jeff stare at the walls of the tent. The light from their headlamps glows on Eric's face as he listens. Eric reaches over and grabs a radio.
I guess that means it's all for one.
Jeff takes the radio.
And one for all.
He hands it to Chris.
And one for all.
And one for all. And one for all. And one for all.
And one for all.
PV nods and clicks on his mic.
We'll push out tomorrow.
Now the setting sun glows over distant mountain ranges. The full moon hangs above Everest's triangular peak. Steady wind blows snow off the summit like smoke billowing from a stack. Words appear, May 24th, 2001, 9 p.m., summit day. In darkness, the tents at Camp 4 glow from within. Slowly, the climbers crawl out into the blustery night. Wrapped in thick parkas and snow pants, their faces are covered by ski goggles and oxygen masks. Tiny beams of light project from under their bulky hoods. Slowly, the eight climbers march away from the tents. Now clouds sweep past the moon. Words appear. Midnight. South Col, 26,500 feet. On a gradual slope, about a dozen climbers walk single file, step by step. One of them drops to his knees.
PV, what's wrong? You all right? No, I don't think so.
PV pulls off his oxygen mask. He clicks on his radio mic.
This is PV. I'm toast.
He shakes his head. Eric turns and lowers his mask.
You need help getting down?
No, go on without me.
Some climbers resume their slow march through the swirling snow. Still kneeling, PV lifts his microphone.
Godspeed, gentlemen.
A climber pats PV on the shoulder. Further up, Eric pulls his oxygen mask back over his face. PV stands up and starts off downhill, stepping past the long line of climbers. Eric grips his poles and resumes the plodding trek up the dark mountain slope. Clouds engulf Everest's craggy peak. Words appear. 2 a.m., below the balcony, 27,000 feet. Buffeted by fierce, wind-blown snow, three climbers brace themselves against a boulder. Jeff lowers his oxygen mask.
Are you guys just standing around not talking?
Chris. Eric pulls down his mask.
I say we give it a chance! I think it's gonna clear!
Right! The blind guy thinks it's gonna clear!
Now in a church, Ellie carries little Emma through the empty sanctuary, up the center aisle, past rows of wooden pews. On a wall high above the altar, a light shines on a large pointed star hanging above a cross. Ellie breaks into a relieved grin and kneels down. Ellie nuzzles her daughter, then gazes up at the star.
See that beautiful star, Emma? It's just like the one in the story that your daddy and I read to you. The story I read to him when we first met. It means your daddy's gonna make it.
The star in the church fades to a real star, shining through a break in the clouds above Everest Base Camp. Kevin hurries out of his tent and talks into his radio.
Hey, guys.
Don't wait yet. Storm's moving fast to the northeast.
You may not be able to see it up there, but down here,
weather's just clear.
High in the mountain, the clouds thin. Chris points to a shining star.
Looks like Superbowl made it right!
Woo! Let's see if this thing breaks up!
Let's move out! Follow me out!
Hey, Biggie! Guess you're a weatherman now, too, huh?
You don't call me Super Blind for nothing!
You got that right!
Slowly, Chris and Jeff step around the boulder. Chris bangs his ice axe on the rock.
Follow the side of my ice axe!
In the dim gray light, the climbers continue their slow progression. Heads bowed and backs bent under their bulky packs, they pause between each step. Following the beams of their headlamps, they trudge across the snow, planting each foot in front of the other. Now in daylight, the climbers march up a bright white snow-crusted slope. Two of them stop and stare down at fixed ropes, half buried in the snow.
Oh, man! The ropes the stripper set up for us are all frozen in!
Eric, we got a problem.
Eric, do you call me?
Further down the slope, Eric stands with Chris. He clicks on his mic.
What's the matter? Fixed lines are frozen.
Jeff and Ong, the Sherpa climber, survey the buried ropes.
But what's ahead? It's too steep to climb without them. This ain't
your terrain, Biggie.
What do we do, BB?
Where's O'Donnell? He's the Iceman.
He's way back there. He's having problems with
his... Not him.
Up at the ropes, Jeff glances at Ong and nods.
Hank and I'll clear it out.
Go do it, dude!
It's gonna sap all your energy! Bro, I wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for you and your dad.
It's all good, brother.
Okay, you guys head on up. I'll go check on Mikey O.
Chris taps Eric on the shoulder, then turns and hikes downhill. Further up the slope, Jeff and Ong kneel in the snow, digging out the frozen rope with their ice axes. With their gloved hands, they pull out a few feet of freed line. Working side by side, they make their way up the slope. With each swing of their axes, snow and ice flies up into their faces. At the top of a rise, Jeff and Ong lift the last section of buried rope out of the snow. Their oxygen masks dangle below their chins as they gasp for breath and collapse onto their sides. Below them, the fixed line lies unencumbered in a trough of chopped-out snow. Later, Eric climbs to the top of the rise by himself. Jeff watches him approach.
Straight ahead, bro. Right over here, man.
Eric grips Ong's hand and drops to his knees. Eric turns toward Jeff.
How are you feeling?
Jeff winces. Struggling for each shallow breath, he bows his head.
This is gonna have to be my son.
Eric lowers his mask.
I was gonna say, if I make it, he'll be my hero.
Jeff looks away and nods.
You already are.
Eric stands up, takes a step, and reaches out to Jeff. They clasp hands, and Eric pulls Jeff to his feet. They wrap their arms around each other, and Jeff squeezes his eyes shut.
Thanks, bro.
Jeff slides his mask over his face and slowly trudges back down the slope. Eric turns uphill toward the Sherpa guide.
Let's go up. Let's go.
Later, they stand on a ledge above a sea of clouds.
Bob, what do I got? Talk to me.
One step down, Eric.
What?
One step down.
Okay.
Be careful.
Words okay. Appear. 8 a.m., yeah. South Summit, 28,600 feet. Ang leads Eric toward a 3-foot-wide ridge with sheer drops to either side. Eric stops and doubles over.
I think I hit the wall.
Eddie, you want to keep going or you want to go back?
Okay.
Eric pulls off his mask and goggles. On the trail behind them, Chris waves from a rocky outcrop.
Hey! Jump up line! You sure are slow, but at least you can't see where you're going!
He bounds toward them.
What took you so long? Hey, you know how I like to make a big entrance.
Chris grabs a fixed line that leads across the knife edge ridge.
Okay. Follow me directly. To the left, we got an 8,000 foot drop to the Nepal. To the right, we got a 12,000 foot drop to Tibet. No room for error. Let's kick this into Morris gear.
Eric waves his fist and together the three climbers march across the ridge, a narrow spine that leads to the snow-capped peak of Everest looming above them. Further down the mountain, Jeff stops and gazes toward the summit. He watches Chris, Ang, and Eric climb a steep wall of ice and rock. Words appear. 9 a.m., Hillary Step, 28,900 feet. Chris hauls himself over a boulder and looks down. Below him, Eric struggles to plant his crampons in the loose rocks. Chris lowers his mask.
Almost there, are you trained?
Gripping the fixed ropes, Eric and Ang pull themselves toward Chris's boulder. From a distance, they appear as tiny specks in the snow near the mountain's triangular peak. Now words appear. May 25th, 2001, 10 a.m., summit, 29,035 feet.
Almost there, Biggie.
Walking shoulder to shoulder, Chris, Ang, and Eric walk toward a plateau at the top of the mountain. Strings of prayer flags mark the summit. Leaning on their poles, the climbers take slow, deliberate steps. Below them, an endless landscape of snow-covered mountain ranges stretches to the horizon.
Biggie! Biggie!
Chris turns to Eric and spreads his arms.
Welcome to the top of the world, man!
He grabs Eric in a bear hug and collapses onto the snow. Ang helps Chris to his feet and they share a congratulatory hug. Eric, his mask pulled below his bearded chin, beams a wide smile. With a mittened hand, he clicks on his radio microphone.
This is Eric! Chris! Hey, I'm sorry. We're on top. I can't believe it. Yeah, but dog!
Eric spreads his arms and pulls Ang and Chris into a big embrace.
You're the best, Big E. You're the strongest man in the world.
Eric smiles broadly and exhales frosty breaths. Behind him, another climber finishes the ascent to the summit.
You're all right, Big E.
The climber pulls off his oxygen mask. It's Jeff. He slaps his hand on Eric's shoulder.
I wasn't going to let you summit. I'd have to hear about it the rest of my life.
They share a hearty embrace. As they separate, Eric wipes tears from his eyes.
All right, boys.
Eric talks into his radio mic.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin.
Yeah, Biggie.
You remember what to do.
They're already on their way, buddy.
In Colorado, a delivery man brings a bouquet of wind-stripped flower stems to Ellie's classroom. She reads the note. I miss you. We summited. I love you, Eric.
He made it.
Ellie's school kids surround her and she wraps them in hugs. Fellow teachers smile and cheer. Ellie throws up her hands and dances in a circle. On the mountain.
You did it, man.
Chris clutches Eric.
So many people died of you, but you did it!
Weather's changing, boys. Celebrate fast. And listen, making it to the summit is optional. Getting down is mandatory.
Oh, we should go down.
Jeff steps up.
Wait a second. Biggie, you're only going to be here once, man. Take a look around. Take it all in. Think about where you are and what you've done.
Eric takes a few steps forward, his face uncovered, his eyes blink rapidly. Our view fills with an image of rippling blue waves. The waves calm and form a vista of snow-capped mountain peaks. In quick breaths. Behind him, a half dozen more climbers reach the summit and celebrate with the others. Eric kneels down and reaches for the prayer flags marking the summit. The strings of colorful flags are tied to bamboo posts, sticking 2 feet out of the snow. Eric pulls off his right mitten, exposing his gloved hand. He reaches into a zippered pocket and takes out his mother's necklace. Eric wraps the gold chain around his hand and kisses the jade bird pendant. Swallowing back tears, Eric hangs the necklace from the bamboo pole. He slides his gloved fingers across the pendant and cries. Eric climbs to his feet.
All right, let's go down.
He joins the rest of the climbers, leaving his mother's necklace draped from the bamboo post, with the prayer flags fluttering in the wind. Fade to black. Words appear. Since 2001, Eric has climbed the tallest peaks on all seven continents. He continues to explore new adventures and break new records for the blind and the sighted. As of June 2006, Eric retains the record as the only blind man to have climbed Mount Everest. This program has been described by the Media Access Group.